All right, we're here with a very special episode right here in the heart of the city of Dubai on a great friend of mine's penthouse at the highest, tallest building in the world. You could tell Burj Khalifa in this penthouse with my dear friend, Karl Haddad. It's a pleasure to be invited to by you this time. Instead of inviting you to the studio, we brought the studio right to your penthouse. So thank you so much.
Hamid, thanks for coming. Thanks for the effort.
Absolutely. So for the audience that are listening right now, the owner of a penthouse at the highest or the tallest building in the world, who is Karl Haddad?
You start with the tough questions, huh?
That's how I usually want the audience, you know, to know who is this person? Who is the person who's actually owning such a piece of art that exists today in Dubai? You know, we can watch, if anyone's watching through the video, they can see the whole city, 360 view of the city of Dubai.
Yeah.
I mean, what an amazing piece of art that you can own, for sure.
It's a unique perspective. I mean, we take it for granted. We see it every day, but truly, this is a vantage point. It makes you realize how insignificant you are and how much is actually going on.
And you can see the speed and the rate of innovation across Dubai. By being here, it's really amazing. I can see, like, okay, what is happening in this specific area? What is happening in Palm Jumeirah? What is happening on that city? It's very interesting.
You know, they should start a tour before you buy a property or something or set up a company. You come to Dubai, you come to the Burj, and you say, "I want to live there."
Exactly. This is like a visual 360 map of looking at the whole city of Dubai, which is amazing,
unobstructed, absolutely.
So, coming back to the question, who is Karl Haddad?
So by education, hospitality professional, by passion, family man, and we have numerous businesses here in Dubai. I've been here for 20 years.
20 years.
20 years. I was here when it was still called the sand pit. It was still a joke, like, you're going back to the sand pit. Now it's more of the urban jungle.
Everyone knows Dubai right now.
Truly. I go to places which you don't find on Google Maps, and you find kids wearing Emirates t-shirts, you know, the football t-shirts and whatnot.
Exactly.
It's another level of marketing, absolutely.
So how did a person such as you came into acquiring something like this, a penthouse, that is at the highest top level of Burj Khalifa right now? How did the story came to be?
Okay. So I moved to Dubai 20 years ago, and I moved into the Burj 10 years ago. This building is actually 15 years old.
Wow.
So when I first came here, you could barely see the foundations coming out of the ground. It was still an idea in execution. And my mom came to visit, and I told her, one day I'm going to live here. So lo and behold, 2015-16, I moved here. And then in just after COVID, my partner and I were informed that a penthouse was for sale. And we came up to see it. And in our mind, we imagined it's a ready asset. You're going to walk into a place and you're going to, like, you know, come in with your toothbrush. And we were fascinated to see it was still in shell and core. And that's where we found the intrinsic value. We said, if we're going to go all in into something, it has to be absolutely unique. Significant, iconic, and an interesting leverage. Because when you buy something that's shell and core, the upside is yours when you build it out. Whereas if you buy something that's ready, it's already been monetized by the other party. So every tick lined up, and we said, this is where we need to be. This is it.
How did your early life shape you to become the man today?
Being a parent right now, I can fully leverage the idea of it's really so much to do with the subconscious training that is instilled into you by your parents. The ethos, the school of life, the way they engage with you and make you understand how important you are, but at the same time, how to be humble. Nowadays, you see a lot of parenting where the parents are, you're number one, you're the best, and you can see it. And I think my parents were very well balanced in that context. And that was probably what really helped me become who I am today, which is impossibly imperfect, but every day is another day, right?
But was there something like of a mind shift, the mindset that you had by yourself that changed everything for you to become a successful person?
Mindset shift. I think my mindset shift happened when I finally achieved my dream.
So what was that dream?
I landed in the United States in March of the year 2001.
Okay.
And by September, we all know what happened.
Yes.
And that taught me two things, because it blew up my dream. I'd spent my entire life, as everyone, especially at the time, living outside of the US, the US was the dream. Everyone wants to go there, live there, work there, make the American dream happen. So I finally get there, 9/11 happens, and within 2 months, I'm terminated.
Mm-hmm.
And that taught me two things. One is your dreams will implode and you just have to keep dreaming. And two, and perhaps controversially, it taught me another thing. The narrative that people will state after such an incident, which goes to show that the truth that you are taught, even from your school books to your daily read, is very much a narrative that is being pushed. As I think anyone who has an education would know very clearly that what happened, as it was said to have happened, did not happen. And that taught me how life really is.
And what about in terms of your business thinking? Who influenced that when you were growing up?
I think we're shaped by so many forces, from the guy who bullies you at school to your coach and how hard they push you. But most importantly, in my case, I think it was mom. And she started young, at the age of, I think, 7 or 8. She used to spoon feed me all these newspapers, so magazines, the Time, The Economist, Newsweek, even the Harvard Business Review.
Oh, wow.
So when most kids were supposedly in their cartoon phase, which I still did, mind you, I was learning a language and an understanding of the world, foundations that became a vocabulary that people would learn much later in life. And this gave me an edge. And everyone has an edge, but I think that was the edge that she offered me.
How old were you at that time?
Around 7 or 8 was when I first started.
You were reading Harvard Business Review.
Or so I think I was. Yeah.
That's amazing. What about in terms of success? Now, I see you from my perspective. You're a successful person based on what you have here and numerous aspects of your life. But do you think that people overcomplicate success? They underestimate what it really takes to become a successful person?
Absolutely. I think we overcomplicate it, well said, and we underestimate what it takes to get there. To give it context here in Dubai, I think when you're in a city that is so successful, it has projected itself around the world in a way that no one ever did without the use of weapons.
Mm.
They didn't do empire building with weapons and bullets and blood. They did it with love, compassion, and understanding the very economic fundamentals that drive people to do something, to be better. When I chose this place, I chose it based on that success factor. I said, I want to be part and I want to align my vision with the vision of the city. What role do I play in this place that with my skill set? Remember, nowadays we're driven by all this influencer BS online, you know, and it's so much of it is untrue. The simple truth of achieving stuff in life is do what you're good at, try to be passionate about it.
Mm.
And most importantly, one word, because there's 400,000 ways to make 1,000,000 times more money than I've made. But truly, it all boils down. You'll see one common denominator for anyone who's made money, apart from thieves, that is. And that is commitment. If you commit to something and you focus on it, you will achieve. Hitting the gym. I've seen you 4 months ago and today. Mashallah alaik. That's commitment. You don't break down when something goes wrong.
Mm.
We try to outthink the problem. And that really is perhaps a very long answer to your very good question.
So to summarize this, do what you love or do what you are good at.
do what you're good at, and hopefully you're passionate about it. Doing what you love, I think that's a fallacy.
Can you really become wealthy without sacrificing relationship, your peace, or your health?
I would be shocked if anyone would say no to that. The sacrifices you make are daily. And the sacrifices can be as inconsequential to the greater scheme of things, such as spending less time with your kids, the people you love, to putting it all, going all in and sleeping on your friend's couch when just the year before you had it all, which has happened to me twice.
You know, in Dubai, when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking a lot of people that come here that are really successful, and then you have other people that come here and fake that success.
Fake it till you make it.
What do you think of that? Should someone fake the identity that they have, but they aspire to be, or should they truly be genuine to where they are?
Let me dissect that into two. There's fake it till you make it, and there's, as you well said, play the part of who you aspire to be. When you're sitting with someone and communicating in a certain communication path with this person, you're communicating who you want to be, not who you are. When you're doing a deal, you're trying to close the deal based on where they want to be. So even what you're communicating to someone who has 20x what you have is convincing him that this is where he wants to go. So in a way, I think the fake it till you make it narrative is at play in every single situation. I sit with people who have 100x what I have. They bring me in as an advisor. I'm also a government advisor to 7 governments around the world. And what we find is very simple. No matter how much wealth you have, there is still fake it till you make it. And when you make it, you're faking it to reach the next level. It's almost a hamster wheel. And if I can add, the ugliest thing in the fake it till you make it is when people feel compelled to sell themselves by the things they're wearing. And if I'm going to look at the single common denominator from all of my entourage and friends and clients who are, again, another level of wealth, almost none of them wear a watch.
Really? So no Richard Mille, no Jacob & Co, no...
They buy them. I buy them. Mm-hmm. I don't wear them. It's an investment.
Mm-hmm.
They don't flash. Not even in their cars. And genuinely speaking, I think most of the hustler mentality, which isn't in Dubai, it's extreme in Dubai because Dubai obviously attracts what it promotes, right? It's promoting we're the best, we're the biggest, we got everything. So you attract the best and the worst of mankind. But I think in general, the fake it till you make it, if you're talking personality-wise versus brand-wise, I could go on for hours here. So let's just say, yeah, roundabout answer. You're probably going to have to fake it till you make it in some form.
Because it's something that everyone is, you know, they have those aspirations to be something. And maybe they want to be with those high net worth investors. They want to be with those high government officials. So in order to match that level, maybe they want to have to fake it in order to match with the levels of the surrounding of the people that you are with. Imagine you're someone who's just starting out in life or you're starting out in this specific business and you're having the chance to meet with those people and you want to create these opportunities, new opportunities for yourself. How would you go about it if you're not going to fake it in a way?
That's the misconception, though, in some shape or form. A lot of what you say is right. And a lot of the people that you deal with want to see that you're extremely successful to deal with you.
Exactly.
For some reason, I think we align to a specific energy thread in the world. And the people I've aligned with, for the most part, are people who seek truth and empathy. You say, look, I genuinely can't tell you if this idea is going to work. But here are why I think it's going to work. I don't think I'm the best at it. Versus the typical narrative nowadays, you watch TV, especially Hollywood TV, it's all about screaming at the top of your voice how amazing you are. And the louder you scream, the more you are hiding, even in a fight. You've seen real fighters. The guy who shuts up is the guy who throws the hardest punch.
And that will be so, yeah. Seems like the one with the loudest mouth usually gets messed up on the ring.
Loses his teeth.
Yeah, or in the cage in that case. What keeps you going when no one's watching? Specifically as a successful person, you're always going to have those tough battles.
Well, look, I'm very hard on myself in general. Everyone in my family tells me to calm down. So I would just say what keeps me going is my love. It sounds generic, but it's true. It's my love for my family, particularly my kids. I feel like in the Khalil Gibran sort of poetic mode, everything I do since my child had her first breath is for them. And that's why I've actually, as mentioned earlier, offset, I'm pretty much a full-time Manny. I feel the greatest investment I can do right now is spend time with my kids. So I spend almost all my available time with my kids.
Interesting. Most people, successful people that I know personally and that I've read about, seem to sacrifice a lot of family time for their business.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they're upcoming, more so. But then by the time they reach even the stage of accomplishment, they even hustle harder or work more time away from the family. So why did you take the different route compared?
Did you ever play computer games when you were a kid?
Yes, I did.
How hard did your parents have to rip that joystick out of your hands?
A lot of the times that I can remember, for sure.
Same here. So when we were kids, gaming was our game. That was our game of life. Now, when you become a man, your game of life is making money. When you become a real man and you have your kids and you have enough money, this is not to be flagrant about it. When you've made enough money to say, would I change the way I live if I had an extra X? If the answer is no, then what are you hustling for? Looking for a legacy? No one cares. Anyone who has 50 million followers today, 10 years after his death, he's gone. What's your legacy? Go back to your legacy. My legacy is my children. My legacy is how my children will one day hear from my friends, I don't care who else out there, how my friends speak about me to them. My legacy is how successful they will be in their life. And when I mean successful, I mean happy in their life. And I don't say this because I have the luxury to say it. It's always been an ethos of mine. And generally, I'm a bit of a lazy person too. So I'll do... I don't want to manage 20,000 people in a conglomerate, even if I could.
But you could.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wish I had put money in some .coms way back when I knew they would have flown. That would have been another level a long time ago. But I chose a different path. Balance.
So what makes Dubai different than most global cities that you have been in when it comes to business?
One word. Execution. Dubai executes. It executes its vision. A lot of places have dreamers. You meet them every day. I see them with the governments that I deal with or don't deal with. There's a lot of dreams. There's a lot of aspirations. There's a lot of, we want to do this. You've seen people with a lot more money. So much more money. Neighbors. No one could achieve this. One word. Execution. Airline, number one. Airport, number one. Tourism, number one. Real estate, number one. I came here 20 years ago. I used to live on the beach. We used to drive our car on the sand, make a bonfire. It was a small town with big dreams. So were many other places. Look at the others.
All through a vision.
Execution of the vision. I can make you a vision for my city better than Sheikh Mohammed, for argument's sake. But who can execute better than the people over here? And where they failed in their own capacities, they hired the foreign talent and they trained the locals. And now you look at the locals, they're on a completely different level. They're more eloquent than the people you see speaking in government in the West. SubhanAllah.
That's a blessing then. It's a blessing that most people don't know, especially the locals right here. But they are now proud of the things that we have achieved so far.
Give me the passport, man. That's my business.
What is the smartest move in 2025 for someone looking to build whether a successful business or have a global influence?
Okay. Now, unfortunately, you're interviewing someone who is a very philosophical stoicism sort of mindset kind of guy. I think you need to focus on yourself. And when you focus on yourself, you'll find your place here, because in this place, you'll get lost very quickly. It'll pull you left and right.
How?
There's so many opportunities. You could meet five people in a day, and each person is making you feel like if you did that or this, you'd make it. But I would definitely say to people who are coming here, don't look at influencers. Just come and do your thing. Because if you're dreaming of the Lamborghini within a week or a month or a year, that's your own fallacy. You'll make money, but it doesn't work that way. Everyone just starts in a sweatshop kind of thing, you know. You're sharing a room, you know, rents aren't cheap. You got to start somewhere. You're not going to come here and live it large from day one.
Sure. So let them not have the disillusion that you can achieve success so fast. What about in terms of Dubai being a very fast-paced environment? How does someone continue to stay ahead of the market and stay ahead of the competitors, stay ahead of people where they're all so driven and so ambitious?
Again, I haven't achieved so much to feel like I'm an authority on this. I would simply say, keep hustling, keep pushing, aim for big.
So you should be a hustler here.
Every day is a hustle.
Let's go back into your business, IRC, that you have. So what does IRC actually do?
So it's one of our companies. IRC stands for Immigration, Residency, and Citizenship. And we specialize in enabling individuals who are high to ultra high net worth individuals to acquire a second citizenship and or golden visa, either in Europe, Dubai, or the Caribbean for the second passports. We're also a government advisor to seven governments on ensuring the programs remain enticing for these people to acquire. And we're also helping form one new program, which we hope to launch this year.
Interesting. You know, I've recently interviewed with one person who was talking about getting different types of citizenships. I just wondered, in terms of your firm, how does it differ from most of those companies that exist out there that help people get citizenship?
Good question. And this is my passion: relationships. I love building bridges and I love building relationships. And this is a very relationship-driven industry. I will know more about you when you're applying for a second passport by investment than anyone else on earth, except perhaps your wife, and definitely more than your banker. I will know everything.
So would you say that someone who applies, they will get to know you in person?
It's a relationship-driven business. We haven't spent a dollar on marketing since inception.
Oh, wow.
10 years ago or 9 years ago. It's always been about, I know Hamid. Hamid likes me. He does it. Hamid brings his friend. His friend brings his cousin. It's really just a domino effect.
How do you go about like finding such network of investors or high-paying clients that are able to invest in a second citizenship? Because that's the hardest thing. Like, you can always try to market the best offers in the world, but it's usually harder to find clients that are able to offer or to pay for what you offer.
I think just show up. Show up. Show up every day. Know what you have, know your limitations, and show up. Go to places. Go to the right events.
Any place to recommend right here in Dubai?
Yeah. Pretty much anywhere in Dubai. Just dodge the guys with the flashy watches and the branded clothes. Anyone who's screaming too loud is not your client in general.
You see.
That's not true completely, but
so what about like places like you heard about the Capital Club, Arts Club, Nura? What do you think of those usually? Do you think that would be great places to meet those high net worth investors in general?
I've been a member of those clubs, or of the Capital Club for a few years way back when. I didn't go for the Arts Club on purpose. I prefer to go there when I'm invited by members. To answer your question, a lot of that is a high-level networking opportunity. it's definitely good to go there. It depends where you're coming from and where you start from. But in general, if you're relationship oriented, you will always find people who are willing to work with you or help you. Asking for help is the single most enticing thing you can ask me.
Interesting.
Carl, can you help me?
Like what?
I'm looking to do X.
Mm.
Do you know anyone? I need a job in Y. Where do you think I could go to that level? And I don't have the time to think where I want to go and what I want to do, but I will help you. So people who know how to ask for help and don't make you feel like you're just a stepping stone, those people will always find people to work with and very happily throw their network at you. As long as they feel you are not a fake it and make it. You're saying, I need help. So you're not faking it.
Mm.
If you're coming and saying, yeah, man, I'm the number one, you know, you're one Google away from being a liar and that's dead.
And that's the thing. It's so hard in today's world specifically to gain the trust of people, because let's say I needed your help to gain access to your network of people. You're not going to give me that access unless you know that whatever I'm trying to ask for you, I'm going to deliver it to your network of people.
Very true. And my help is based on the fact that I feel I can trust you. Why would I throw you into my circle if you're a hustler big time? Everyone's hustling, but I mean, there's hustler and there's hustler. It's fake it till you make it and there's, I'll play the part.
So how can I gain someone's trust who never knew me before?
Oof, that would be bad. I don't know. I'll just say be yourself. And you're not going to click with everyone. Very often the people you want in your world will not be the ones who want you in their world.
Mm.
The moment you accept that, you'll find the people that want to be in your world are the people you're pushing away. Like any relationship.
Yeah.
If a girl's too quick to get you, you're not interested. If she makes you run for her, yeah, same in everything.
That's very true. That's very true. Now they give me another perspective that not every girl wants you, but there might be a girl that might want you. So not everyone who's a 10 or everyone who's an 8 might want you, but there is an 8 or there is a 10 out there in the world that might be attracted to you as a person.
That's a whole podcast. We can do that one. Okay. We can do a round 2.
For sure.
Yeah.
So coming back to IRC, how can someone get a citizenship? Second citizenship in this case.
So effectively, as long as you don't have any major issues, and you're just doing it because you want a plan B, you want to travel more easily, you're tired of going to embassies and begging them to give you a visa so you can go spend your money in their country. A lot of high net worth individuals go for this second passport as the logical next step. They do so to also protect the family. How do they do it? They contact our company and many others out there, and we conclude in the agreement is a very transparent process, as it is a government process. We don't open a briefcase and say, like in the movies, which passport do you want? A bit of Jason Bourne, you know? It's a process. And once you pass the directives, typically within 10 to 12 months, you have a second passport for yourself and your family. As I said, I don't do marketing, so I'm not talking about it much, but that's what we do, yeah.
So in terms of passports, if someone's looking to get a second citizenship, what is this passport right now, whether it's trending or not, that is the most recommended passport you would recommend to someone to get?
Hmm. So a few years ago, I would have said Cyprus, because I'm from Cyprus, and it was the best passport available for most people, not just in terms of travelability, the number of countries you can travel to. It was also that you would buy a property and so forth. But nowadays, those programs are defunct. So what we call the Rolls Royce of citizenship is Malta.
Hmm.
Those go for like 1.5 million. Take 2 years. You have to be super clean, like you haven't missed a parking ticket kind of thing clean. You can go for the Caribbean countries, which offer very good programs in the like, $250,000 plus US.
Interesting. So let's talk about the Burj Khalifa penthouse that we're sitting right now here.
Indeed.
What would you do? I'm sure you put it on for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. At what price with this current stage?
Currently at 180, and we're going to increase the price from next month.
That's after Trump being right here, right?
Okay. So glad you brought that up, actually. Listen, Trump's arrival, not his biggest fan, but I'm definitely big time on him because he's a doer. You don't have to like someone, respect someone. I totally respect him in his way. And what he did in this one visit was affirm this part of the world, and he's really reset the geopolitical landscape. If anyone, and this market is on fire in any context, any industry, choose any silo, it's on fire. Everything's going crazy. His arrival stated something to the world. Dubai, the Middle East, the Gulf, but especially Dubai, the Emirates, to be specific, is not just exceptional. It's one of a kind. He said it 100 different ways. He showed it. And the way our politicians handled him, Europe could learn something.
Building that partnership relationship where they had so many numerous investments went into the United States, not only here.
1.4 trillion is going that way.
Exactly.
It's a two-way street.
Over 10 years, $1.4 trillion, not even dirhams.
It's a two-way street. And trust you me, since his arrival, I have had, I can't say, so many more people knocking on our doors. I think it has effectively just reaffirmed our position and said, it's actually a safe place. Don't worry. Everything's going to be okay. So although everyone was coming here before, there was always this malaise, like, you know, 5%, things could go wrong. Gone. I think business sentiment here must be the highest in the world right now.
Definitely. I can't even recommend more than enough that if someone really wants to settle in Dubai, this is their chance before it gets even much more higher in expenses when it comes to their properties. They definitely should invest in something to settle here.
Don't miss the train. It's already moving really fast.
It's moving so fast. I can't comprehend between after COVID, a few years down the line, you see the prices of the property just climbing up. I'm not only talking about maybe just the apartments, but even the low supply of communities. You're talking about villas, townhouses. These are also great opportunities for people to invest because a lot of people who are bachelors eventually are going to become family. And then when it comes to being having a family, you need a wider spaces. It's not only one bedroom apartment, two bedroom apartment.
True. When I first moved in, it was a two bedroom. And now it's four.
Yeah.
So can I move anywhere else out of this building? No. Out of this city? No.
Hmm.
Go where? For sure. Where do you want to go?
Me. I love Maidan, honestly. For me, I always felt like Maidan has been not as center as Dubai downtown, but it's still in a way, it's far enough for me to feel that peace and quiet, but still close enough to the city where I can just immediately go.
Central suburbia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just feels that close enough. I can see it from far away and I just feel calmness.
Yeah.
Now, going into a lesson that maybe the audience can hear from you. What have you learned from dealing with those ultra high net worth individuals throughout your life?
One lesson?
There can be many lessons. Is there something that potentially you could teach the audience and how they can deal with someone who's a high net worth?
Well, dealing with what we call high net worths.
Maybe in the way they greet, in the way they introduce themselves.
That's a whole podcast by itself. I'm not quite sure. Maybe we can just...
One thing that is important. I'm sure there's something that is very important that they can learn.
You know that old school expression? Don't bullshit a bullshitter. No one really makes it without getting there in their own brand manner. And they know. So the fake it till you make it. Back to your original question. I'll just say be yourself.
Be genuine.
Don't let your insecurities transpire because they're very quickly said. If you sit there and talk too much about how awesome you are, you're not. You will see, okay, you know what? Let me answer your question a better way. They have one thing in common. They rarely talk about how amazing they are. They will literally drop one or two things and you understand from there everything.
Sound advice. To be genuine, don't try to showcase that you're an overachiever in a way that like I'm going to highlight all my achievements like a resume, trying to lay it out. But more so, let your actions and let yourself be yourself when you're talking with them.
Right on.
I'm sure that with so many fake people always getting attracted to those high net worth individuals, they're always trying to get something out of them. Maybe you can be the person who's just generally interested to know more about them, more so than taking anything from them. I think that's what we lack these days.
Agreed.
That's a very transactional.
That's how we connected. Some things are just genuine. You can't force a friendship. You can't force a relationship.
And like you said, if it clicks, it clicks. If it doesn't, you will know.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, City of Dubai, if you think about it, it could be a place of success with lots of different opportunities, or it could be a place with lots of different distractions. How do you stay focused on such a world in the city that is filled with temptations, distractions,
and okay, I hear you. You probably won't. No matter what I say, you won't. Dubai is a place that just completely, it fuses the best of the entire universe in one place. And if we could find a way to make summer a bit more bearable, I think there would be, you'd be in utopia. All right. So until that day, I would say, focus and commit to your idea. Because every day you will be distracted by 5 different ways to skin a fish. Skin the fish the way you know, and keep at it every year on year. And if you still don't have the Lamborghini in the 10th year, that's okay. Because trust you me, anyone who wants to know you when you have a nice car is not somebody you want in your life. You want the people who knew you when you were climbing the ladder.
So you think I should, even if I have a nice car like a Lamborghini, I should drive a Toyota Camry? Until like,
I love to be understated now. There are two sides to it, yeah? I would just say, if you like Lambos, drive Lambos. If it's what makes you tick, get tick. Could be one of your 17 cars. You're not even showing up. This is like your basic, well, I'm not going to drive something else, you know? And I'm not going to sit here and judge people. I'm just saying to people who want to come here, those things will bring with them their own entourage of people that you really don't want in your life. The users, the manipulators, the leeches.
That's the hard thing of being a rich person, right?
Which is why I love this building. Living here.
The things they're all successful.
Safe for as well. Withdrawal. Like the secret of my success is I know how to be quiet with myself. I'm still. I wake up at 4 in the morning or 4:30. By the time it's 7 o'clock or 7:30 and most people are waking up, I've done everything I need to do. I'm 3 hours ahead of my day.
4:30 you wake up?
Yeah.
So 3 hours. What time do you sleep?
It depends. But no matter what time I sleep, go crazy 5 a.m. I'm awake.
Wow.
And you can do it in a place where you're quiet. You know, there isn't the hustle and the bustle of them.
I feel like you're still in the epicenter of the world. I mean, not in the world, but in the city of Dubai, for sure. So, it's like everything is pretty much available in Burj Khalifa, right? For you. In terms of groceries, everything pretty much needed is here.
Look, the one horrible thing about Dubai, which is not, you know, it's common knowledge, is traffic. It's a horrible affliction to most major cities. And Dubai is obviously, it's 3.5 million people by day, as Russell Peters once said, and you know. It's 3.5 million by night probably, and 5 million by day with everyone coming in. So traffic is terrible.
But they're finding ways to actually combat that.
Oh, they're fixing it. Don't get me wrong. It's just a matter of time. But until then, I love staying here for one reason.
No,
everything is here.
Yeah.
We walk into Dubai Mall with the kids. You got your clinics downstairs, your supermarkets, 40, 50 restaurants. 250 around
the best amenities right here also.
Yeah.
Very nice views. The amenities they have.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
But let's say, other than the Burj Khalifa, where would you go as a Dubai resident to reset when things feel overwhelming? How do you reset that?
When the weather is right, I love my, I sound like a Tinder ad, I think. I like my long walks on the beach.
Okay. Kind of beach, which one? High beach?
Numerous. All the Jumeirah beaches in general, where there aren't too many people. Kite Beach is quite busy for me. I go with the kids on the bikes, those kind of things. Desert drive. We still need to do one together.
Interesting.
During the morning.
Hopefully not during the summer, though.
Yeah.
During the winter time, for sure. For sure. So now that we're coming to a close of the podcast, if there's one advice you could give to someone before coming to Dubai, what would that be?
Mm. Ya Habibi, come to Dubai.
I'm sure there's so many people right now in Dubai, and it's going to be like 8 million by 2040. But what would be that one advice that will make them truly succeed right here?
Advice for success. I'm definitely not that person. I failed twice. There you go. There's your answer. Be prepared to fail. Wow, that came straight up, huh? Be prepared to fail. You will fail. And then you will succeed. When you succeed, it'll be like nowhere else.
Yeah. Sound advice. I think, yeah, everyone should prepare to fail. Eventually, through your failures, you learn more. And when you learn more, you can achieve more. Sure. Thank you so much for inviting us once again to this amazing penthouse. And it's dark right now, but it's an amazing view. It has 360 views for sure. And I'm sure eventually this might be one of our last chances to actually do something like this here, because it's going to get sold out very soon.
Yeah, since Trump came, it looks like it's going to...
So once in a kind of a lifetime opportunity to do this on the center of Dubai. Thank you so much, Carl.
Thank you for having me. And I wish you and your family all the success in the world.
Absolutely.
Can't wait to see you in your own...
You never do. Our life takes on.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
Never. Thank you. All right. We're here with the very special episode right here in the heart of the city of Dubai on a great friend of mine's penthouse at the highest, tallest building in the world. You could tell Burj Khalifa in this penthouse with my dear friend, Carl Haddad. It's a pleasure to be invited to by you this time. Instead of inviting you to the studio, we brought the studio right to your penthouse. So thank you so much.
Hamid, thanks for coming. Thanks for the effort.
Absolutely. So for the audience that are listening right now, the owner of a penthouse at the highest or the tallest building in the world, who is Carl Haddad?
You start with the tough questions, huh?
That's how I usually want the audience, you know, to know who is this person? Who is the person who's actually owning such a piece of art that exists today in Dubai? You know, we can watch, if anyone's watching through the video, they can see the whole city, 360 view of the city of Dubai.
Yeah.
I mean, what an amazing piece of art that he can own, for sure.
It's a unique perspective. I mean, we take it for granted. We see it every day, but truly... this is a vantage point. It makes you realize how insignificant you are and how much is actually going on.
And you can see the speed and the rate of innovation across Dubai by Banker. It's really amazing. I can see like, okay, what is happening in this specific area? What is happening in Palm Jumeirah? What is happening on that city? It's very interesting.
You know, they should start a tour before you buy a property or something or set up a company. You come to Dubai, you come to the Burj and you say, I want to live there.
Exactly. This is like a visual 360 map of looking at the whole city of Dubai, which is amazing.
Unobstructed, absolutely.
So coming back to the question, who is Carl Haddad?
Fulala. So by education, hospitality professional, by passion, family man. And we have numerous businesses here in Dubai. I've been here for 20 years.
20 years.
20 years. I was here when it was still called the sand pit. It was still a joke. Like, you're going back to the sand pit. Now it's more of the urban jungle.
Everyone knows Dubai right now.
Truly. I go to places which you don't find on Google Maps and you find kids wearing Emirates t-shirts. You know, the football t-shirts and whatnot.
Okay.
It's another level of marketing.
So how did a person such as you came into acquiring something like this, a penthouse that is at the highest top level of Burj Khalifa right now? How did the story came to be?
Okay. So I moved to Dubai 20 years ago and I moved into the Burj 10 years ago. This building is actually 15 years old.
Wow.
So when I first came here, you could barely see the foundations coming out of the ground. It was still an idea in execution. And my mom came to visit and I told her, one day I'm going to live here. So lo and behold, 2015-16, I moved here. And then in just after COVID, my partner and I were informed that a penthouse was for sale.
Hmm.
And we came up to see it. And in our mind, we imagined it's a ready asset. You're going to walk into a place and you're going to, like, you know, come in with your toothbrush. And we were fascinated to see it was still in shell and core. And that's where we found the intrinsic value. We said, if we're going to go all in into something, it has to be absolutely unique, significant, iconic, and an interesting leverage. Because when you buy something that's shell and core, the upside is yours when you build it out. Whereas if you buy something that's ready, it's already been monetized by the other party. So every tick lined up and we said, this is where we need to be. This is it.
How did your early life shape you to become the man today?
Being a parent right now, I can fully leverage the idea of it's really so much to do with the subconscious training that is instilled into you by your parents. The ethos, the school of life, the way they engage with you and make you understand how important you are, but at the same time, how to be humble. Nowadays, you see a lot of parenting where the parents are, you're number one, you're the best, and you can see it. And I think my parents were very well balanced in that context. And that was probably what really helped me become who I am today, which is impossibly imperfect, but every day is another day, right?
But was there something like of a mind shift, a mindset that you had by yourself that changed everything for you to become a successful person?
Mindset shift. I think my mindset shift happened when I finally achieved my dream.
So what's that dream?
I landed in the United States in March of the year 2001.
Okay.
And by September, we all know what happened.
Yes.
And that taught me two things. Because it blew up my dream. I'd spent my entire life, as everyone, especially at the time, living outside of the U.S., the U.S. was the dream. Everyone wants to go there, live there, work there, make the American dream happen. So I finally get there, 9/11 happens, and within 2 months, I'm terminated.
Mm-hmm.
And that taught me two things. One is your dreams will implode and you just have to keep dreaming. And two, and perhaps controversially, it taught me another thing. The narrative that people will state after such an incident, which goes to show that the truth that you are taught, even from your school books to your daily read, is very much a narrative that is being pushed. As I think anyone who has an education would know very clearly that what happened, as it was said to have happened, did not happen. And that taught me how life really is.
And what about in terms of your business thinking? Who influenced that when you were growing up?
I think we're shaped by so many forces, from the guy who bullies you at school to your coach and how hard they push you. But most importantly, in my case, I think it was mom. And she started young. At the age of, I think, 7 or 8, she used to spoon feed me all these newspapers. So magazines, the Time, The Economist, Newsweek, even the Harvard Business Review.
Oh, wow.
So when most kids were supposedly in their cartoon phase, which I still did, mind you, I was learning a language and an understanding of the world, foundations that became a vocabulary that people would learn much later in life. And this gave me an edge. And everyone has an edge, but I think that was the edge that she offered me.
How old were you at that time?
Around 7 or 8 was when I first started.
And you were reading Harvard Business Review.
Or so I think I was. Yeah.
That's amazing. What about in terms of success? Now, I see you from my perspective that you're a successful person based on what you have here and numerous aspects of your life. But do you think that people overcomplicate success? They underestimate what it really takes to become a successful person?
Absolutely. I think we overcomplicate it, well said, and we underestimate what it takes to get there. To give it context, here in Dubai, I think when you're in a city that is so successful, it has projected itself around the world, in a way that no one ever did without the use of weapons.
Hmm.
They didn't do empire building with weapons and bullets and blood. They did it with love, compassion, and understanding the very economic fundamentals that drive people to do something, to be better. When I chose this place, I chose it based on that success factor. I said, I want to be part and I want to align my vision with the vision of the city. What role do I play in this place that with my skill set? Remember, nowadays we're driven by all this influencer BS online, you know, and it's so much of it is untrue. The simple truth of achieving stuff in life is do what you're good at, try to be passionate about it.
Mm.
And most importantly, one word, because there's 400,000 ways to make a million times more money than I've made. But truly, it all boils down. You'll see one common denominator for anyone who's made money, apart from thieves, that is. And that is commitment. If you commit to something and you focus on it, you will achieve. Hitting the gym. I've seen you 4 months ago and today. Mashallah alaik. That's commitment. You don't break down when something goes wrong.
Mm.
You try to outthink the problem. And that really is perhaps a very long answer to your very good question.
So to summarize this, do what you love or do what you are good at?
Do what you're good at and hopefully you're passionate about it. Brilliant. Doing what you love, I think that's a fallacy.
Can you really become wealthy without sacrificing relationship, your peace, or your health?
I would be shocked if anyone would say no to that. The sacrifices you make are daily. And the sacrifices can be as inconsequential to the greater scheme of things, such as spending less time with your kids, the people you love, to putting it all, going all in and sleeping on your friend's couch when just the year before you had it all, which has happened to me twice.
You know, in Dubai, when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking a lot of people that come here that are really successful. And then you have other people that come here and fake that success.
Fake it till you make it.
What do you think of that? Should someone fake the identity that they have, but they aspire to be? Or should they truly be genuine to what they are?
Let me dissect that into two. There's fake it till you make it. And there's, as you well said, play the part of who you aspire to be. When you're sitting with someone and communicating in a certain communication path with this person, you're communicating who you want to be, not who you are.
Hmm.
When you're doing a deal, you're trying to close the deal based on where they want to be. So even what you're communicating to someone who has 20x what you have is convincing him that this is where he wants to go. So in a way, I think the fake it till you make it narrative is at play in every single situation. I sit with people who have 100x what I have. They bring me in as an advisor. I'm also a government advisor to 7 governments around the world. And what we find is very simple. No matter how much wealth you have, there is still fake it till you make it. And when you make it, you're faking it to reach the next level. It's almost a hamster wheel. And if I can add, the ugliest thing in the fake it till you make it is when people feel compelled to sell themselves by the things they're wearing. And if I'm going to look at the single common denominator from all of my entourage and friends and clients who are, again, another level of wealth, almost none of them wear a watch.
Really? So no Richard Mille, no Jacob and Cole, no...
They buy them. I buy them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't wear them. It's an investment.
Mm-hmm.
They don't flash. Not even in their cars. And genuinely speaking, I think most of the hustler mentality, which isn't in Dubai, it's extreme in Dubai because Dubai obviously attracts what it promotes, right? It's promoting we're the best, we're the biggest, we've got everything. So you attract the best and the worst of mankind. But I think in general, the fake it till you make it, if you're talking personality-wise versus brand-wise, I could go on for hours here. So let's just say, yeah, roundabout answer. You're probably going to have to fake it till you make it in some form.
Because it's something that everyone, you know, they have those aspirations to be something. And maybe they want to be with those high net worth investors. They want to be with those high government officials. So in order to match that level, maybe they want to have to fake it in order to match with the levels of the surrounding of the people that you are with. Imagine you're someone who's just starting out in life, or you're starting out in this specific business, and you're having the chance to meet with those people, and you want to create these opportunities, new opportunities for yourself. How would you go about it if you're not going to fake it in a way?
That's the misconception, though, in some shape or form. A lot of what you say is right, and a lot of the people that you deal with want to see that you're extremely successful to deal with you.
Exactly.
For some reason, I think we align to a specific energy thread in the world. And the people I've aligned with, for the most part, are people who seek truth and empathy. You say, look, I genuinely can't tell you if this idea is going to work, but here are why I think it's going to work. I don't think I'm the best at it. Versus the typical narrative nowadays, you watch TV, especially Hollywood TV, it's all about screaming at the top of your voice how amazing you are. And the louder you scream, the more you are hiding. Even in a fight, you've seen real fighters. The guy who shuts up is the guy who throws the hardest punch.
And that will do you. So, yeah. See, so the one with the loudest mouth usually gets messed up on the ring.
Loses his teeth.
Yeah. Or in the cage, in that case. What keeps you going when no one's watching? Specifically as a successful person, you're always going to have those tough battles.
Wow. Look, I'm very hard on myself in general. Everyone in my family tells me to calm down. So I would just say what keeps me going is my love. It sounds generic, but it's true. It's my love for my family, particularly my kids. I feel like in a Khalil Gibran sort of poetic mode, everything I do since my child had her first breath is for them. And that's why I've actually, as mentioned earlier, offset, I'm pretty much a full-time Manny. I feel the greatest investment I can do right now is spend time with my kids. So I spend almost all my available time with my kids.
Interesting. Most people, successful people that I know personally and that I've read about, seem to sacrifice a lot of family time for their business.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they're upcoming, more so. But then by the time they reach even the stage of accomplishment, they even hustle harder and work more time away from the family. So why did he take the different route compared?
Did you ever play computer games when you were a kid?
Yes, I did.
How hard did your parents have to rip that joystick out of your hand?
A lot of the times that I can remember, for sure.
Same here. So when we were kids, gaming was our game. That was our game of life. Now, when you become a man, your game of life is making money. When you become a real man and you have your kids and you have enough money, this is not to be flagrant about it. When you've made enough money to say, would I change the way I live if I had an extra X? If the answer is no, then what are you hustling for? Looking for a legacy? No one cares. Anyone who has 50 million followers today, 10 years after his death, he's gone. What's your legacy? Go back to your legacy. My legacy is my children. My legacy is how my children will one day hear from my friends, I don't care who else out there, how my friends speak about me to them. My legacy is how successful they will be in their life. And when I mean successful, I mean happy in their life. And I don't say this because I have the luxury to say it. It's always been an ethos of mine. And generally, I'm a bit of a lazy person too. So I'll do... I don't want to manage 20,000 people in a conglomerate, even if I could.
But you could.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wish I had put mine in some dot-coms way back when I knew they would have flown. That would have been another level a long time ago. But I chose a different path. balance.
So what makes Dubai different than most global cities that you have been in when it comes to business?
One word. Execution. Dubai executes. It executes its vision. A lot of places have dreamers. You meet them every day. I see them with the governments that I deal with or don't deal with. There's a lot of dreams. There's a lot of aspirations. There's a lot of, we want to do this. You've seen people with a lot more money.
Mm.
So much more money. Neighbors, no one could achieve this. One word, execution. Airline, number one. Airport, number one. Tourism, number one. Real estate, number one. I came here 20 years ago. I used to live on the beach. We used to drive our car on the sand, make a bonfire. It was a small town with big dreams. So were many other places. Look at the others.
All through a vision.
Execution of the vision. I can make you a vision for my city better than Sheikh Mohammed, for argument's sake. But who can execute better than the people over here? And where they failed in their own capacities, they hired the foreign talent and they trained the locals. And now you look at the locals, they're on a completely different level. They're more eloquent than the people you see speaking in government in the West. SubhanAllah.
That's a blessing, though. It's a blessing that most people don't know, especially the locals right here. But they are now proud of the things that we have achieved so far.
Give me the passport, man. That's my boo.
What is the smartest move in 2025 for someone looking to build whether a successful business or have a global influence?
Okay. Now, unfortunately, you're interviewing someone who is a very philosophical stoicism sort of mindset kind of guy. I think you need to focus on yourself. And when you focus on yourself, you'll find your place here. Because in this place, you'll get lost very quickly. It'll pull you left and right.
How?
There's so many opportunities. You can meet five people in a day and each person is making you feel like if you did that or this, you'd make it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would definitely say to people who are coming here, don't look at influencers. Just come and do your thing. Because if you're dreaming of the Lamborghini within a week or a month or a year, that's your own fallacy. You'll make money, but it doesn't work that way. Everyone starts in a sweatshop kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. We're sharing a room, you know, rents aren't cheap. Got to start somewhere. You're not going to come here and live it large from day one.
True. So let them not have the disillusion that you can achieve success so fast. What about in terms of Dubai being a very fast-paced environment? How does someone continue to stay ahead of the market and stay ahead of the competitors, stay ahead of people where they're all so driven and so ambitious?
Again, I haven't achieved so much to feel like I'm an authority on this. I would simply say, keep hustling, keep pushing, aim for big.
So you should be a hustler here.
Every day is a hustle.
Let's go back into your business, IRC, that you have. So what does IRC actually do?
So it's one of our companies. IRC stands for Immigration, Residency and Citizenship. And we specialize in enabling individuals who are high to ultra high net worth individuals to acquire second citizenship and or golden visa, either in Europe, Dubai, or the Caribbean for the second passports. We're also government advisor to seven governments on ensuring the programs remain enticing for these people to acquire. And we're also helping form one new program, which we hope to launch this year.
Interesting. You know, I've recently interviewed with one person who was talking about getting different types of citizenships. Just wondering, in terms of your firm, how does it differ from most of those companies that exist out there that help people get citizenship?
Good question. And this is my passion, relationships. I love building bridges and I love building relationships. And this is a very relationship-driven industry. I will know more about you when you're applying for a second passport by investment than anyone else on earth, except perhaps your wife. And definitely more than your banker. I will know everything.
So would you say that someone who applies, they will get to know you in person?
it's a relationship-driven business.
Hmm.
We haven't spent a dollar on marketing since inception.
Oh, wow.
10 years ago or 9 years ago. It's always been about, I know Hamid. Hamid likes me. He does it. Hamid brings his friend. His friend brings his cousin. It's really just a domino effect.
How do you go about like finding such network of investors or high-paying clients that are able to invest in a second citizenship? Because that's the hardest thing. Like, you can always try to market the best offers in the world, but it's usually harder to find clients that are able to offer or to pay for what you offer.
I think just show up. Show up. Show up every day. Know what you have, know your limitations, and show up. Go to places. Go to the right events.
Any place to recommend right here in Dubai?
Yeah. Pretty much anywhere in Dubai. Just dodge the guys with the flashy watches and the branded clothes. Anyone who's screaming too loud is not your client in general.
You see.
That's not true completely, but.
So what about like places like you heard about the Capital Club, Arts Club, Nira? What do you think of those usually? Do you think that would be great places to meet those high net worth investors in general?
I've been a member of those clubs, or of the Capital Club for a few years way back when. I didn't go for the Arts Club on purpose. I prefer to go there when I'm invited by members.
Mm.
To answer your question, a lot of that is a high level networking opportunity. It's definitely good to go there. It depends where you're coming from and where you start from. But in general, if you're relationship oriented, you will always find people who are willing to work with you or help you. Asking for help is the single most enticing thing you can ask me.
Interesting.
Carl, can you help me?
Like what?
I'm looking to do X.
Mm.
Do you know anyone? I need a job in Y. Where do you think I could go to that level? And I don't have the time to think where I want to go and what I want to do, but I will help you. So people who know how to ask for help and don't make you feel like you're just a stepping stone, those people will always find people to work with and very happily throw their network at you. As long as they feel you are not a fake it and make it. You're saying, I need help. So you're not faking it.
Mm.
If you're coming and saying, yeah, man, I'm the number one, you know. You're one Google away from being a liar, and that's dead.
And that's the thing. It's so hard in today's world specifically to gain the trust of people. Because let's say I needed your help to gain access to your network of people. You're not going to give me that access unless you know that whatever I'm trying to ask for you, I'm going to deliver it to your network of people.
Very true. And my help is based on the fact that I feel I can trust you. Why would I throw you into my circle? If you're a hustler, big time, everyone's hustling, but I mean, there's hustler and there's hustler. There's fake it till you make it and there's, I'll play the part.
So how can I gain someone's trust who never knew me before?
Oof, that would be, I don't know. I'll just say, be yourself. And you're not going to click with everyone. Very often the people you want in your world will not be the ones who want you in their world.
Mm.
The moment you accept that, you'll find the people that want to be in your world are the people you're pushing away. Like any relationship, yeah. If a girl's too quick to get you, you're not interested. If she makes you run for her, yeah, same in everything.
That's very true. That's very true. Now they give me another perspective that not every girl wants you, but there might be a girl that might want you. So not everyone who's a 10 or everyone who's an 8 might want you, but there certainly is an 8 or there is a 10 out there in the world that might be attracted to you as a person.
That's a whole podcast. We can do that one. Okay. We can do a round two.
For sure.
Yeah.
So coming back to IRC, how can someone get a citizenship? Second citizenship in this case.
So effectively, as long as you don't have any major issues and you're just doing it because you want a plan B, you want to travel more easily, you're tired of going to embassies and begging them to give you a visa so you can go spend your money in their country. A lot of high net worth individuals go for this second passport as the logical next step. They do so to also protect the family. How do they do it? They contact our company and many others out there, and we conclude in the agreement. It's a very transparent process, as it is a government process. You don't just, we don't open a briefcase and say, like in the movies, which passport do you want? Is that Jason Bourne? You know, it's a process. And once you pass the directives, typically within 10 to 12 months, you have a second passport for yourself and your family. As I said, I don't do marketing, so I'm not talking about it much, but that's what we do, yeah.
So in terms of passports, if someone's looking to get a second citizenship, what is this passport right now, whether it's trending or not, that is the most recommended passport you would get, you would recommend to someone to get?
So a few years ago, I would have said Cyprus, because I'm from Cyprus, and it was the best passport available for most people, not just in terms of travelability, the number of countries you can travel to. It was also that you wouldn't buy a property and so forth. But nowadays, those programs are defunct. So what we call the Rolls Royce of citizenship is Malta.
Hmm.
Those go for like $1.5 million. Take 2 years. You have to be super clean, like you haven't missed a parking ticket kind of thing clean. You can go for the Caribbean countries, which offer very good programs in the like, $250,000 plus US.
Interesting. So let's talk about the Burj Khalifa penthouse that we're sitting right now here.
Indeed.
What would you do? I'm sure you put it on for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. At what price or this current stage?
Currently at 180, and we're going to increase the price from next month.
That's after Trump being right here, right?
Okay. So glad you brought that up, actually. Listen, Trump's arrival, not his biggest fan, but I'm definitely big time on him because he's a doer.
Hmm.
You don't have to like someone, respect someone. I totally respect him in his way. And what he did in this one visit was affirm this part of the world, and he's really reset the geopolitical landscape. If anyone, and this market is on fire in any context, any industry, choose any silo, it's on fire. Everything's going crazy. His arrival stated something to the world. Dubai, the Middle East, the Gulf, but especially Dubai, the Emirates, to be specific, is not just exceptional. It's one of a kind. He said it 100 different ways. He showed it. And the way our politicians handled him, Europe could learn something.
Building that partnership relationship where they had so many numerous investments went into the United States, not only here.
1.4 trillion is going that way.
Exactly.
It's a two-way street.
Over 10 years, $1.4 trillion, not even dirhams.
It's a two-way street. And trust you me, since his arrival, I have had, I can't say it, so many more people knocking on our doors. I think it's effectively just reaffirmed our position and said, it's actually a safe place. Don't worry. Everything's going to be okay. So although everyone was coming here before, there was always this malaise, like, 5%, things could go wrong. I think business sentiment here must be the highest in the world right now.
Definitely. I can't even recommend more than enough that if someone really wants to settle in Dubai, this is their chance before it gets even much more higher in expenses when it comes to the properties. They definitely should invest in something to settle here.
Don't miss the train. It's already moving really fast.
It's moving so fast. I can't comprehend between after COVID, the few years down the line, you see the prices of the property just climbing up. I'm not only talking about maybe just the apartments, but even the low supply of communities. You're talking about villas, townhouses. These are also great opportunities for people to invest because a lot of people who are bachelors eventually are going to become family. And then when it comes to having a family, you need a wider spaces. It's not only one bedroom apartment,
true.
Two bedroom apartment.
True, true. When I first moved in, it was a two-bedroom. And now it's four.
Yeah.
So did I move anywhere else? Out of this building? No. Out of this city? No.
Hmm.
Go where?
For sure.
Where do you want to go?
Me? I love Maidan, honestly. For me, I always felt like Maidan has been not as center as Dubai downtown, but it's still in a way, it's far enough for me to feel that peace and quiet, but still close enough to the city where I could just immediately go.
Central suburbia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just feels that close enough. I can see it from far away and I just feel
yeah.
Calmness.
Yeah.
Now, going into a lesson that maybe the audience can hear from you, what have you learned from dealing with those ultra high net worth individuals throughout your life?
One lesson?
It could be many lessons. Is there something that potentially you could teach the audience and how they can deal with someone who's a high net worth?
Well, dealing with what we call high net worths.
Maybe in the way they greet, in the way they introduce themselves.
That's a whole podcast by itself. I'm not quite sure. Maybe we can just...
One thing that is important. I'm sure there's something that is very important that they can learn.
You know that old school expression? Don't bullshit a bullshitter. No one really makes it without getting there in their own brand manner. And they know. So the fake it till you make it, back to your original question, I'll just say be yourself.
Be genuine.
Don't let your insecurities transpire because they're very quickly said. If you sit there and talk too much about how awesome you are, you're not. You will see, okay, you know what, let me answer your question a better way. They have one thing in common. They rarely talk about how amazing they are. They will literally drop one or two things and you understand from there everything.
Sound advice. To be genuine, don't try to showcase that you're an overachiever in a way that, like, I'm going to highlight all my achievements like a resume, trying to lay it out. But more so, let your actions and let yourself be yourself when you're talking with them.
Right on.
I'm sure that with this, so many fake people always getting attracted to those high net worth individuals, they're always trying to get something out of them. Maybe you can be the person who's just generally interested to know more about them, more so than taking anything from them. I think that's what we lack these days.
Agreed.
It's a very transaction.
That's how we connected. It was just pure. Some things are just genuine. You can't force a friendship. You can't force a relationship.
And like you said, if it clicks, it clicks. If it doesn't, you will know.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, city of Dubai, if you think about it, it could be a place of success with lots of different opportunities, or it could be a place with lots of different distractions. How do you stay focused on such a world in the city that is filled with temptations, distractions?
Okay. I hear you. You probably won't. No matter what I say, you won't. Dubai is a place that just completely... It fuses the best of the entire universe in one place. And if we could find a way to make summer a bit more bearable, I think there would be... You'd be in utopia. All right. So until that day, I would say... focus and commit to your idea, because every day you will be distracted by five different ways to skin a fish. Skin the fish the way you know and keep at it every year on year. And if you still don't have the Lamborghini in the 10th year, that's okay, because trust you me, anyone who wants to know you when you have a nice car is not somebody you want in your life. We want the people who knew you when you were climbing the ladder.
So you think I should, even if I have a nice car like a Lamborghini, I should drive a Toyota Camry until I find one
person. There are two sides to it, yeah? I would just say, if you like Lambos, drive Lambos. If it's what makes you tick, get tick. Could be one of your 17 cars. You're not even showing up. This is like your basic... Well, I'm not going to drive something else, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and judge people. I'm just saying to people who want to come here, those things will bring with them their own entourage of people that you really don't want in your life. The users, the manipulators, the leeches.
That's the hard thing of being a rich person, right?
Which is why I love this building. Living here,
nothing's all successful.
Safe as well. Withdrawal. Like the secret of my success is I know how to be quiet with myself. I'm still. I wake up at 4 in the morning or 4:30. By the time it's 7 o'clock or 7:30 and most people are waking up, I've done everything I need to do. I'm 3 hours ahead of my day.
4:30 you wake up?
Yeah.
So 3 hours you're awake. What time you sleep?
It depends. But no matter what time I sleep, go crazy 5 a.m. I'm awake.
Wow. You know?
And you can do it in a place where you're quiet. You know, there isn't the hustle and the bustle of
I feel like you're still in the epicenter of the world. I mean, not in the world, but in the city of Dubai, for sure. So it's like everything is pretty much available in Burj Khalifa, right? For you. In terms of groceries, everything pretty much needed is here.
Look, the one horrible thing about Dubai, which is not, you know, it's common knowledge, is traffic. It's a horrible affliction to most major cities. And Dubai is obviously, it's 3.5 million people by day, as Russell Peters once said, and you know. And it's 3.5 million by night probably, and 5 million by day with everyone coming in. So traffic is terrible. So,
but they're finding ways to actually combat that.
Oh, they're fixing it. Don't get me wrong. It's just a matter of time. But until then, I love staying here for one reason.
No,
everything is here.
Yeah.
We walk into Dubai Mall with the kids. You got your clinics downstairs, your supermarkets, 40, 50 restaurants, 250 restaurants.
The best amenities right here also. Yeah. Very nice views. The amenities they have. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
But let's say, other than the Burj Khalifa, where would you go as a Dubai resident to reset when things feel overwhelming? How do you reset that?
When the weather is right, I love my... I sound like a Tinder ad, I think. I like my long walks on the beach.
Okay. Kind of beach. Which one? High beach?
Numerous. All the Jumeirah beaches in general, where there aren't too many people. Tide Beach is quite busy for me. I go with the kids on the bikes. Those kind of things. Desert drive. We still need to do one together.
Interesting.
During the morning.
Hopefully not during the summer, though.
Yeah.
During the winter time, for sure. For sure. So now that we're coming to a close of the podcast, if there's one advice you could give to someone before coming to Dubai, what would that be?
Ya Habibi, come to Dubai.
I'm sure there's so many people right now in Dubai and it's going to be like 8 million by 2040. But what would be that one advice that will make them truly succeed right here?
Advice for success. I'm definitely not that person. I failed twice. There you go. There's your answer. Be prepared to fail. Wow, that came straight up, huh? Be prepared to fail. You will fail. And then you will succeed. When you succeed, it'll be like nowhere else.
Yeah. Sound advice. I think, yeah, everyone should prepare to fail. Eventually, through your failures, you learn more. And when you learn more, you can achieve more.
Sure.
Thank you so much for inviting us once again to this amazing penthouse. And it's dark right now, but it's an amazing view. It has 360 views for sure. And I'm sure eventually this might be one of our last chances to actually do something like this here, because it's going to get sold out very soon.
Yeah, since Trump came, it looks like it's going to...
So once in a kind of a lifetime opportunity to do this on the center of Dubai. Thank you so much, Carl.
Thank you for having me. And I wish you and your family all the success in the world.
Absolutely.
Can't wait to see you in your own.
You never do. Our life takes us.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
Never. Thank you. All right. That's a wrap up of our podcast session on the highest tower that we have here in the city of Dubai, Burj Khalifa. We're the highest residence floor and we have finished the podcast session. And that's thanks to the Podcast Hub, where they helped us, the only studio that I was very supportive. They were very supportive to helping me set up everything that we need to do to make this special professional podcast session. So thanks to them once again. And that's Hamid Ali, Dubai Catch, signing out.